Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to yet another episode of Horror versus Reality. Now, quick announcement, my lovely forever co-host, co-pilot Morgan is getting married in the fall. Now, because of the fact that she is a nurse and she's planning a wedding, until after the wedding, we will have kind of a revolving door of co-hosts. Today, my co-host is Olivia from Live Spooky. Hi, Olivia.
Hello, bonjour. I don't really speak French. That's the most of it, but hello.
I'm pretty sure that I speak more French than you.
1000% you do. I will not disagree with that.
Excellent. And you're the Canadian one. So that's fun.
I sure am. I took French a lot in school, but I just could not stick with it.
That's fair. You know, it's not for everyone.
I remember food more than anything else, which you know, because when you speak to me in French, I just respond with food.
Yeah, there's a lot of fromage talk.
Well, cheese is good. I get it.
Little pomme de terre.
Yep.
Cheesy potatoes.
Oh, that's good shit.
Oh, yeah, pomme de terre is just potato.
I know, but cheesy potatoes, I'm like,
well, fromage. Yeah, you get what I'm saying. I said cheese and then I said potato. So now I'm just thinking about cheesy potatoes. Anyway, moving on. So Morgan may come back if she has like a free weekend occasionally before the wedding, but for the most part, expect there to be a revolving door of co-hosts until after Morgan becomes a missus. So
I get the excitement. I'm planning my own, but mine's not for a couple years, so
Okay, so my partner's brother is also getting married, and his fiance lives with us. So between Morgan, you, and her, I'm so glad that your wedding is further off, because this is a lot of wedding stuff for me. Like, it's a lot of wedding talk, and Lord knows I'm not a wedding person.
Well, and like, you're also going to at least two this year.
Not just going to two this year, I'm a bridesmaid in two this year.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. That's a lot for me. However, because I thought about it, and the last time I was a bridesmaid in anything, it was literally 10, maybe 11, maybe even 12 years ago. And it was my cousin's wedding. And I was
I was only asked
to be a bridesmaid because one of her bridesmaids backed out.
Oh, ouch.
And I can fit in the dress.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, oh, you're small enough. You can fit in that.
I mean, you are small enough. I get it.
It was fine. I caught the bouquet. Not that it matters. And I'm pretty sure that half the wedding saw my underwear. So, woo!
Woo! Dinner and a show.
I mean, I don't think they were thrilled about it because it was a dry Pentecostal wedding in Mississippi.
I love it.
So very religious and very sober. Anyway, let's get into today's movie. Olivia, we are talking about 1988's Dead Ringers and the spooky-ass Marcus twins.
What a wild ride this was.
Yep, the movie's a wild ride, the real story's a wild ride, and they're not too terribly different. There are a few deviations between what really happened and what's in the movie, especially because, you know, David Cronenberg likes to do his Cronenberg thing and make things weird,
yeah,
and creepy.
Yeah, I'd say so. What the fuck did we watch? It was a little, I was like, what is going on?
Had you never seen a Cronenberg movie before?
I'm not 100% sure.
Have you ever seen The Fly with Jeff Goldblum?
Like, it sounds familiar, but I don't know if I've actually seen it.
Okay.
I know who David Cronenberg is, and I know he's a Canadian director.
I would say I should hope so. He is probably the most famous Canadian horror director, and you're Canadian. I don't know how I could have you on my show if you just didn't know who Cronenberg was. But I'd be a little
sad. I do kind of live a little bit under a rock, so no, it shouldn't surprise you too much.
No, I know. I know you do. But I like to think that through my two podcasts, I have slowly made you watch things that you never would have watched.
yes. Oh, yeah. Nick actually walked out when I started watching Attack of the Killer Tomatoes when it started singing the song. He walked away and went and sat in the bedroom and watched TV because he couldn't do it.
I hope that every so often you just sing the theme song of that to him.
I sing it at work sometimes.
See, I love that I've gotten the theme song of that deeply embedded in your brain now.
It's a good song.
Yeah. But for more killer objects, you'll have to go over to my other podcast where we just recorded Chopping Mall. So go listen to an episode about killer robot security robots in a mall and horny teenagers. It's a good time. Okay. So let's get into it, Olivia.
All right.
All right. Let's just dive on in. So the director is David Cronenberg. As I've said, this is not the first time we've covered a Cronenberg film on this podcast. Our first Cronenberg was Naked Lunch, and that is loosely based on the life of William S. Burroughs and the death of his late wife, Joan Vollmer. So for more on the godfather of body horror, visit or revisit our Naked Lunch episode. I'm not going to go through my whole little spiel on Cronenberg again because I could do a whole episode just on him. And I just literally don't have that kind of time. So, but a side note, I am planning to catch Cronenberg's son, Brandon's new film, Infinity Pool, that just came out in theaters last week. And I'm hoping to catch it at some point this week before it just disappears out of theaters. Because I think it will, because it's a bizarre horror film and those just don't stay around in theaters very long.
I've noticed that.
It's tragic. You gotta see them, like, when they come out, or you're stuck waiting a couple of months for it to stream somewhere.
I'm excited for a horror film that comes out in, like, I think it's about 3 more weeks, maybe a month at most. So excited.
What's it called?
It's Scream.
Oh, you're excited for Scream 6?
Because, yes, because I'm a big Scream fan. I can't help it.
I really liked the first Scream, and even the second Scream is fine. I don't know. It wasn't a horror movie that I thought needed a sprawling franchise. I mean, I definitely, like, after the third one, I was definitely like, let's never revisit this.
Right?
And then we did 3 more times, including the one that's about to come out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like, oh, what? We're taking Ghostface to New York? Oh, I've never seen that before. Jason Takes Manhattan.
Right? Oh, I was laughing so hard when I saw that. I said the same thing.
But, you know, all I can hope for is that somehow they bring Stu Mocker back from the dead. I think that's the only thing that would make me interested in watching it.
There's a lot of rumors, but...
Well, so our friend over at the You Run podcast, he has been on a campaign, like trolling everyone, like, yeah, Stu's coming back. I'm telling you, we got to get Stu back. I will riot if Stu doesn't come back. So I'm just, you know what? I'm on board. If he comes back, like, that'd be cool.
That would be a really good twist, I think.
Because look, at this point, even with, you know, returning characters from a couple of the newer ones, like from 4 and 5, the only character that I even remotely care about that is still in the picture is Courtney Cox's character.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, Sydney's not in the movie, and I don't care enough about the fucking journalist Gail Weathers.
Yeah, I think it mostly focuses on Sam in this one.
I don't care about the new characters.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't in the original trilogy, I really don't care about you. Sorry, not sorry.
No, I think it's just because they're trying to continue on, right? So they need new characters for that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I like the first two, and I just kind of don't care about the rest of it.
First one's a classic. The first
one's a classic. It, you know, Craven directed it, written, you know, we did a whole episode about Scream on this podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought I listened to one.
You did. We go into depth about it. It's like a 2-hour episode about Danny Rawling and the making of Scream. So I'm not going to go into it anymore, but yeah. So anyway, let's get back to
Jeff Bridges. We could talk forever about everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why I have a podcast, but there's a time and a place and an episode for everything. Anyway, so let's talk about some of our actors in this movie, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. So Jeremy Irons plays Beverly and Elliot Mansell, our main characters. They are twins. Jeremy is a British actor of screen and stage and one of the few actors to achieve the acting triple crown, receiving an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. The Oscar is for his role in Reversal of Fortune, which is a film that I would love to cover because it is also based on a wild true crime story, but it's told in a dramatic format and not in a horror film. Therefore, it won't ever be discussed here, but it is a really interesting story that is worth watching. So go watch Reversal of Fortune or look up what it's about, like the actual case. Both are wild. That's your non-horror homework, okay?
Non-horror homework.
Mm-hmm, yes. His Emmy is, well, he's got 3 Emmys, actually, but the acting one specifically, like live action, is for the 2006 miniseries Elizabeth I. His 2 other Emmys, one is for voiceover work for his something. It's for voiceover work, sorry. And then the other one is for narration. And lastly, his Tony, he won for his lead performance in The Real Thing. Now, he also has a SAG Award and a Golden Globe Award. So, I mean, the man's got, like, all the major awards. He's pretty damn talented, absolutely. Now, the vast majority of people may recognize his distinct, and I personally think sexy, voice as the voice of Scar in The Lion King.
Oh, that's who it is.
Yep. It's all coming to you now.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
I was singing The Lion King yesterday.
Hakuna Matata. Don't sue me, Disney. I'm not going to go any further, I promise. Okay. So, as some of you may remember, my favorite Jeremy Irons film is the 1997 remake of Lolita. Only Morgan were here for me to bring this conversation back to Lolita again. Because for some reason, the topic of Lolita just keeps coming up. There just keeps being ties back to either the book or the screenwriter or one of the directors or an actor that was in one of the 2 Lolita adaptations. Anyway, I'm always excited to bring it back to Lolita. I know everyone's like, but Anna, that's like about a pedophilic romance and it's not cool. That's fucked up. And I'm like, yeah, but the first one's a Kubrick film and it's barely shows anything. Everything's just implied. It's a classic. And the one with Jeremy Irons has Jeremy Irons. I don't care that he's a pedophile.
Jeremy Irons.
He is sexy as hell in that movie, even though it's very complicated feelings when you watch it. But as I will always defend, the book, despite the subject matter, is very, very well written. Like, beautifully written. Everyone knows I love Vladimir Nabokov, if you've been listening to this podcast. So, now, let's move on to Geneviève Bujold. And that's the proper way to pronounce her name, the French way.
Oh.
Geneviève Bujold. If you're American, you might pronounce it Genevieve, and that's just a terrible butchering of that name. Geneviève is so much prettier, and it's sexier. Geneviève. Anyway.
I'm not even going to attempt to say it, because it's not going to sound like that.
Anyway, Geneviève Bujold.
Geneviève.
She plays Claire Naveau. Bujold is a French-Canadian actress from Montreal. She is known for her portrayal of Anne Boleyn in the period drama film Anne of the Thousand Days from 1969. Bujold received an Oscar nom for Best Actress for that film. Some of her other film credits include The Trojan Women from 1971, Obsession from 1976, Coma from 1978, 1984's Tightrope, 1988's Dead Ringers, of course, and 1997's The House of Yes, which is notably another film with a strange pair of twins, albeit not quite as strange as this one. It's mostly just Parker Posey's character, who is obsessed with Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and is fresh out of an insane asylum, I believe, in the movie.
Interesting.
It's a really funny movie. It's like a dark comedy, but yeah, it's one of those ones that...
My kind of movies.
Yeah, you'd blink and you miss it, because it's just, it's an indie flick, and Parker Posey is like the American indie darling, or she was like in the 90s anyway. But, oh, also fun fact, since I'm talking about Parker Posey now, she's from Mississippi. Let's talk about Barbara Gordon. She plays Danuta, the clinic receptionist. It's not a very big role, but I should say this. She is a noted 2-time Genie Award nominee for Best Supporting Actress, receiving nods at the very first Genie Awards in 1980 for Wild Horse Hank, and at the 7th Genie Awards in 1986 for Overnight. I'm assuming
Wild
that those
Horse
are
Hank.
It's a Canadian movie.
Never heard of it.
Well, you know, you haven't heard of a lot of movies.
I
to
know.
Be fair. But I mean, I hadn't either, because these are like distinctly Canadian films that were nominated for Genie Awards, which is like the most Canadian thing ever, the Genie Awards. It's not really, but I mean, it's like you guys's like Academy Award, right? Kind of.
I know of the Junos.
The Junos are like the Grammys. The
yeah,
Genies
they're
are
like the music ones. I didn't, I mean, I should what? Have known that we had one for like movies and stuff, but I
why
definitely
do I know,
didn't.
Why do I know more about this than you?
I don't know. When I message my cousins in Australia and England and I tell them random facts that I know about where they live, I'm like, do you know this? And they're like, no, why do you know so much about where we live? I don't know anything about where I live, I swear.
Well, huh. I just have, through podcasting and just life, I seem to have collected a menagerie of Canadian friends from across the country. Like, I've got a friend in almost all the provinces now. It's kind
of
weird.
In the territories?
I don't think so. I think that's where I'm missing. But
that's
just
what
about,
you need to work on, though.
I guess so. All my Inuit people, where you at?
Yo, Northwest Territories. Yeah. None of it. And the Yukon. Yeah. There's some pretty cold areas.
Yep. Yeah. Let's get back to Barbara. So Barbara Gordon, let's be real here, because I said she plays the receptionist, who is notably named Danuta. I cannot talk about a character named Danuta without bringing up another fictional character named Danuta. And yes, I'm talking about American Dad again. See, on American Dad, there is a recurring character named Danuta that is a friend of Haley's. And if you've never seen the show, Google Klaus Danuta phone call American Dad, and you will almost certainly find the clip I am referencing. Trust me, Klaus finds out that Danuta thinks he is cute, and him trying to ask her out over the phone is hysterical. Oh, by the way, Klaus is a German Olympic skier stuck in a goldfish's body.
Yep. I haven't watched American Dad in a long time.
I could probably quote entire seasons of it. It's maybe a little embarrassing, but I love that show. And I recently found out that the actor from The Sopranos, Michael Imperioli, I watched this video from Architecture's Digest where he's like showing people his big fancy apartment. And when they're in the bedroom, he like shows how his TV's like does something. He has like something that covers it like a screen because he doesn't want to just stare at a TV when it's not on, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, but then he like removes that and shows them the TV, and then he tells them, I watch a lot of American Dad. It's probably my favorite show. And I was like, I've never liked you more, Michael Imperioli. I now love you. Anyway, so Shirley Douglas plays Laura in the film. Douglas was a Canadian actress who ultimately went on to focus on activism more than her own acting career. She helped start the group Friends of the Black Panthers while married to actor Donald Sutherland, and her activism eventually led to her 1969 arrest for allegedly trying to purchase hand grenades for the Black Panthers. This ultimately got her work visa denied, but she was later exonerated of this charge. But
interesting.
But she did end up having to go back to Canada in 1977, and then she never moved back to America. Now, if you're wondering, yes, she is in fact Kiefer Sutherland's mother. And one more fun fact, she had a small role in the original Kubrick-directed Lolita. Another Lolita!
I was feeling like, oh no, another one.
Yep. All right, so Stephen Lack as Anders Wallach. He is a Canadian artist and former actor, best known for his leading role in David Cronenberg's Scanners, which is a great movie with a wonderful exploding head scene that you should all Google if you've never seen it.
I will have to do that when we're done.
Absolutely. And Alan Moyles, The Rubber Gun, for which he was nominated for 2 Genie Awards. And last of all for the cast, we have Jill and Jacqueline Hennessy as twin escorts. Now, of the two, Jill is definitely the more famous of the twins, as she actually has an acting career. Jacqueline didn't really do anything after this.
They were actual twins in it?
Yes. Unlike our star here, this was an actual pair of twins. Yes. But Jill Hennessy is known for her role as a district attorney or a prosecuting attorney, I think, on Law and Order, the original one.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a TV show in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s on NBC in America called Crossing Jordan. And she played the title role of Jordan. And she was, like, I want to say a medical examiner on that show, something like that.
That sounds really familiar.
Yeah, so if she looked familiar, that's where you might know her from.
Okay.
Yep. All right, let's get into what happens in the movie, shall we? Oh my goodness. Anytime you talk about a Cronenberg movie, you're just like, it's about to get weird. It's going to get really weird.
It is about to get really weird. And yeah. I got my little Mothman sitting with me, ready for the weirdness.
Excellent. So glad I sent you that link. All right. So twins Elliot and Beverly Mantle are gynecologists who jointly operate a highly successful clinical practice in Toronto that specializes in treating fertility problems. Now, Elliot is like the outgoing, confident one who goes to the award shows and seduces women that come into the clinic, which is not problematic at all. The real problematic thing here is that when he tires of the women that he dates, he just like gives them to his twin brother, basically to fuck without letting the woman know that she's been traded off to the twin as sloppy seconds.
That's pretty shitty thing to do.
It's super shitty, but it is something that these two do.
And it's stuff that happens in real life too, because I've heard of other like cases and stuff where twins have shared partners without them knowing or, yeah.
Look, all I gotta say is, whether the twins are fraternal or identical, if they look enough alike, maybe think twice before dating one.
Right. Look for the differences.
Yeah. I say this as my basically brother-in-law is getting married to a twin this summer. And they do look a lot alike, but I can't tell the difference between them.
Trust it. Twins yeah. are fascinating.
Also, they would never do that, but these twins would anyway. These are some fucked up twins. So Claire comes in and she's a famous, maybe not a famous, but she's an actress. And she comes into the clinic because she has known forever that, you know, even when she's sloppy with protection, nothing's ever happened. She's like, I'm infertile. I need help.
And she makes it very clear that she does not use any sort of contraceptions.
Oh, yeah. She spells it out for you. She's like, I don't wrap it up. I don't do spermicide, pills, nothing. I just raw dog it and nothing ever happens.
Raw dog.
I mean, she does not say that because she's like a sophisticated French actress.
But she
French Canadian
it.
Actress. She does. That's just me making it fun. Anyway, we find out that she has a trifurcated cervix, which means that her womb is like split up into like three tiny little wombs, sort of, and that's what's making her infertile, basically.
It's a little bit more common than people think, but normally I think with two, not three.
Yeah, like this was a little more unusual than than you would normally see in a situation like this. So she's at this point unable to have children. And Elliot does what Elliot does, and he seduces Claire. And then...
Well, let me try to, you know,
yeah. You. Yeah, maybe I can put it in you. good Lord. By the way, their sex is...
the most awkward thing I've ever seen.
It's so weird. He ties her to the bedpost.
And she's just like sitting on him.
Yeah. And he ties her to the bedpost with like rubber surgical
tubing.
Tubing, yeah.
Like
so weird. And like some weird metal clamps too.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. Anyway, it doesn't look like it's not super well choreographed. It doesn't look like anything's happening between them. Like, they're supposedly having some kind of sexual relations, but it sure doesn't look like it. It just looks like she's weirdly tied up and vaguely moaning because he's doing something, allegedly.
Yeah, it looks like they've already had the sex and they're just chilling.
Yeah, but she's still tied up and he's like
and
pretending
she's
to do something. Oh, yeah, her sex noises are a choice. They are a choice. Anyway, so after this, he's like, well, Beverly, I've slept with her. Your turn. But Beverly becomes emotionally attached to her. And this throws the balance of the twins off because they are deeply connected and deeply codependent.
Yeah, not quite in sync, but like in sync.
Yeah, they're pretty in sync. While he's been dating Claire, he starts abusing prescription drugs, which is something that she also does. And
did she kickstart that for him?
Pretty much.
Because I was going to say, it seemed like she was like, hey, just take this, everything will be okay. And then he just spiraled.
Yeah, it seemed like something that she does just casually as an actress who has nerves or whatever. And then he was just like, yeah, let's do it. And went full force.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and he abuses his own right to write prescriptions to do this, by the way. So he's making, he's writing fake prescriptions for himself and her so that they can abuse drugs. Woo!
Yay!
Mm-hmm. So there's this, yeah, so Claire figures out that they've been taking advantage of her and that she's been sleeping with both of them. And there's this great scene in the restaurant when she confronts them. And by the way, she doesn't even know that he has a brother for a little while. And then she's like, wait, so not only do you have a brother, but he's your twin brother? And you didn't tell me this? Am I the only fucking person who doesn't know the famous twin gynecologist? God, I'm an idiot. You know, that's basically like, how she's like.
And that they live together, because I'm pretty sure he had told her that they weren't close at all before she found out they were twins.
Yes. He's like, oh, yeah, I have a brother, but we're not close. I'm a total liar because I have a twin brother who's like my Siamese twin, not attached.
Foreshadow.
And he definitely lives with me, so I'm a big, fat, fatty, fat liar. And she's like, you know, she's at a table with them and she's like, well, you've both been fucking me. So, you know, I know how to tell the difference between the two of you. You're the asshole and you're the nice one.
Iconic.
Yep. It's a great telling off. Like, those bitches deserve it. And then she splashes water in Beverly's face because he's the sweet one, but he was still in on this shit, so it hurts worse.
Like, and Elliot was so blunt about it too. He's just like, I fucked you first and I got bored and just threw you at my brother.
Yeah, like, because she
with
thinks
no remorse either. Just,
yeah, oh my god, yeah, because she thinks that Elliot's been impersonating Beverly this whole time, but originally Elliot fucked her first.
Yeah.
And so his response to her saying that was like, actually, I fucked you first. And then when I got bored of you, I just passed you off to my baby brother. So creepy.
Like, ooh, fuck.
What? Yeah, like, oh, hell. I would have
thrown a drink in both of their faces, not just one.
I would have gotten carried out of the restaurant because I would have maybe fought them physically. I would have at least slapped one of them.
Use the food. There's food on the table. Use some of it to your advantage.
Oh my god! If there were mashed potatoes, I'd love to just like shove that up his nose.
Yeah. This was just a head right in it.
Those fuckers deserved it. But violence is not the answer, but this is like basically being raped.
Well, it was unconsensual for sure.
Well, yeah, because she thinks you're someone else. She's only consenting to the sex with the person that she thinks it is. So yeah. It being a twin that she didn't, that's rape.
Yeah.
It's complicated rape, but it's rape.
Complicated for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Claire leaves town to work on another film, and Beverly spirals. He's taken way too many drugs, and he starts having delusions about mutant women with abnormal vajayjays.
And shoots up in his office when the secretary walks in.
Oh, yeah. He's getting real sloppy. The fucks are not being given anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So then he seeks out this renowned metal artist Anders Wallach, and he commissions the set of bizarre gynecological instruments. I say that with quotes because they are not standardized by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, they're made by imagination, all right. Holy shit.
Well, that
they're
part is
scary.
True, yes. They are freaky. Would you like to describe one of them?
One of them looks like, okay, what would it be more like, an ant, maybe? Like an ant's hand? Or like a fly's hand?
It looks like an insect's leg.
Yeah, or like a scorpion tail, almost.
Yeah, it's freaky.
Like,
it's freaky.
What is the purpose of that?
Yeah, what is that going to do to a woman's vagina?
Like, yeah, and one looks like a bear trap.
Yeah, that's maybe the scariest one. Like, what's yeah, that supposed to do?
Oh my God.
Like, that one made my vagina retreat inside itself. It's a black hole now, actually.
Just like a Barbie now.
Yeah, there's nothing there now. My sex is gone. Anyway, so Beverly prepares to operate on a patient with one of his new toys. And his team looks on in shock, like, what the fuck? And before he can even get going, he drops one of the tools and just kind of collapses because he's fucking doped up on drugs. And he actually reaches over and starts inhaling from the patient's gas mask, which, by the way, is something that one of the twins does in real life, just starts breathing in one of his patient's oxygen. So that's fine.
I did not read that.
Well, yeah, that was something that he really did. So there you go. That's fun. You're getting so sloppy that you're just like, let me just get high off of this oxygen for my patient for a second. Never mind if the patient dies or not, you know, like, I'm just going to get...
Just give me like 2 seconds. That's all I need is a little... Just a hit.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen, probably not, but to the audience, if you've ever seen the movie Blue Velvet with Dennis Hopper, it makes me think of that, because Dennis Hopper has this creepy thing where he has, like, a laughing gas thing from a doctor's office, and he just, like, really gets into sucking in the laughing gas. Like,
so does the one doctor in American Horror Story.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I would wager that that is a nod to Blue Velvet.
Maybe. Because I was going to say, it sounds very similar what you were talking about.
Well, Blue Velvet came out in, like, 1986.
Ah.
So I'm pretty sure it had to have been a nod to it. I mean, it's a pretty iconic scene, to be honest. It's a David Lynch film, which is right up there with crazy imagery in cinema. Like, him and Cronenberg have done some bizarre things on screen, for sure. All right, so... After this happens, both brothers are suspended from practicing at the hospital and are put on administrative leave. Rightly so, because they are slipping.
Well, yeah, and like Elliot keeps going on about how he has to rebalance them.
Yeah, they're both losing it because they're so close.
Yeah.
So eventually, now that their careers are stunted, perhaps even in ruin, Elliot locks Beverly inside their clinic and tries to get him clean. But which is a weird thing because he also has to take the pills himself in order to synchronize with Beverly. So now they're both on drugs inside the clinic for some reason. And then
I jumped the gun on that. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're all right. And then Beverly leaves... Claire returns and Beverly leaves the clinic to be with her. But after kind of recovering his sobriety, when he returns to the clinic, he finds it in shambles. And Elliot is despondent and intoxicated. And they have basically reversed roles. And now Beverly is taking care of Elliot. But he is off the deep end.
They both are at this point.
They, bo- They both are. It's true. So they go to celebrate their mock birthday. And Elliot is like, you know, I volunteer as tribute. That's not what he says. But basically, he volunteers to be killed so that this, like, psychic Siamese connection between them can be severed and Beverly can have a normal life, according to Elliot.
Which is, like, very, I'm blanking on the name of, it's, that part is super similar to another twin case, the, they're two girls.
The silent twins?
Yes, the silent twins, because they had a similar pact like that, too. The one was, like, they were, like, one has to die for the other one to live.
That's true, and you know what? A movie just came out about them, and it is streaming on, it is streaming on Peacock in the U.S., I'm not sure about elsewhere in the world. It is depicted.
I will check. I just downloaded Peacock.
Oh, nice. It should be on there then. Because I don't think their streaming things are too different between Canada and the U.S.
Oh, wait. I lied. It's Pluto TV.
Okay. I can't promise anything. And then that is a different thing.
It's okay. They have an entire channel that just constantly streams classic Doctor Who.
Oh, I'm aware. I fall asleep to that sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I'm like, oh, yeah.
They don't show anything in order, though. That's the only problem.
I don't care. It's I'm still happy with the results.
Okay. Anywho, so Beverly gets Elliot up on an examination table, and with one of, well, specifically with the claw-like instrument that Wallach made for them, he disembowels his own brother. And this is the same thing that he was literally going to use on a patient earlier.
Yep.
Like,
a this pregnant would have, patient.
This would have killed this woman.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure she was pregnant, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, probably. Well, maybe.
Maybe.
It could have been, there could have been a problem with the pregnancy.
Yeah,
because,
I think there were blankets over her, so it was hard to tell, but.
Yeah, like maybe, I don't know. Because I know that their clinic specifically is for infertility problems.
True.
But, yeah, I don't know. They, you know, that if that was at, the, oh, you know what? If that was at the hospital, though. That's right. So, yeah, she probably was pregnant. She was at the hospital.
Yeah.
Because that scene was there, because that was right before they got thrown out. Anywho, back to where we were. So, the following morning, Beverly wakes up and is like, oh, shit, I killed Elliot. Because they were both pretty fucking drugged up, strung out when all that shit happened.
Like,
so,
they were both 1,000% blacked out during that.
Oh, yeah. So he's, like, devastated. It's like he killed half himself. So he leaves the clinic, and he calls Claire, and she's like, who is this? And so he just, like, leaves. Walks away from the payphone.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But I was like, what?
He's like, how does she not, you know, I guess he's just like, what? How does she not know this is me? I guess is his thought process. Again, he's fucked up at this point. He's super strung out and fucked up. So he just walks back into the clinic and kind of like curls up and hugs his brother's corpse and lets himself die. Presumably from withdrawals, because he's been doing heavy amounts of drugs and then tried to make himself sober.
Yeah,
abruptly.
And prescription drugs, not like street drugs either. Like, this well, is
mean,
like
heavy duty prescription drugs. You can also definitely die from withdrawals of.
Oh yeah.
Especially like barbiturates and shit like that.
Mm. Which is, we'll get to it in a bit. That's one of the things that they were accused of taking in real life.
Yes, very much so. So, before we move on to that portion, let's get into fun facts.
I love fun facts.
Oh, we all do. Director Peter Greenaway claims that Cronenberg asked him about his film, A Zat in Two Knots, for up to 2 hours before going on to make Dead Ringers 8 months later. Now, I looked into this film, and I had never heard of it prior to doing research, but it definitely shares similarities, but not enough, in my opinion, for Greenaway to try to claim that Cronenberg lifted anything from it. So it's about twin zoologists whose wives die in a horrible car accident, and then they become obsessed with death and decay to grave consequences. No pun intended. Yes. So mainly the two movies both involve weird twins who are codependent and don't handle life very well. But that's kind of where the similarities end. And
I was about to say, that seems like that's about where the similarities end.
The only other thing is that a woman kind of comes between both of them and both sets of twins in both movies. But that's it. That's kind of the only, those are the only similarities. Like, the plots are very different. I don't want to ruin anything. They're both tragic endings, but they're still different enough films. And Cronenberg's is based on a real set of twins. So, like I said, I just don't think there's enough there.
Yeah.
I feel like Greenaway, it was maybe jealous that his twin movie wasn't as well known and well received.
Maybe, like, as recognized, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of people have heard of Dead Ringers, especially in the horror community, but have you ever heard of a Zed Two Knots? I'm thinking probably not. Probably
yeah.
not. I will note that it is a British film, though, so if you're British, you might be more likely to know of it, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. Just maybe. Because, I mean, you're Canadian, and you don't know a lot of Canadian films, so who knows?
Yeah.
You just never know. Anyway, so I also discovered that they are planning to make a Dead Ringers TV adaptation for some fucking reason. Now,
don't know why that needs a TV adaptation, but
really, really doesn't. I don't actually know if it's still in production or not, or if it's been like shelved permanently. But it was set to star Rachel Weisz, main actress in The Mummy, opposite of Brendan Fraser.
Oh, I know who that is.
Oh, yes. Famously, I think she was married to Darren Aronofsky for a little while. But anyway, she was going to play Beverly and Elliot in this version in a gender swap situation.
Oh, okay. That would be kind of interesting.
It would be interesting, but, like, I don't know. Sometimes gender swap stuff works great. And sometimes TV adaptations flesh out characters in a way that film cannot.
I think it would work if it was in a movie.
I think it could be done in a movie. But yeah, I don't see the point in a gender swap drawn out TV adaptation of this.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't see that working. But who knows? We might see it on somewhere eventually. if it's still being made, I do not know. All right, so in the DVD commentary, Irons claims that Robert De Niro declined to play Mantles, the twins, due to his unease with the subject matter and the fact that he did not want to portray a gynecologist.
Interesting.
I think that's some sexist bullshit, Robert De Niro, but that was his reasoning. William Hurt was also up for the part, but due to two reasons he didn't end up being the twins. The first reason is scheduling conflict, and the second reason is he was kind of like, you know, on second thought, it's hard enough to play one role, let alone two.
Hey, so Lindsay Lohan can do it, anyone can do it. Okay, she was a child and she did it.
Look, here's the thing. Lindsay Lohan was, at one point in her life, a good actress.
Exactly, in The Parent Trap.
And then drugs happened, and it's like she lost her mojo.
True, but if she can do it as a child, I feel like a lot of people could do it. That's pretty talented.
Yeah, and I mean, from my understanding, they didn't even do this with, like, CGI or anything, because this is 1988, so this was done
just, like, overlapping, right, kind of?
It's done with this, like, it is a computer-generated thing, but it's like a mirror matte thing. I don't know. Look, I'm not a filmmaker, and I'm definitely not a CGI specialist or a practical effects specialist. But this was a more old school way of filming it that they did, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Than the way that they probably did it for Lindsay Lohan anyway. But I, not to downgrade her performance in that children's classic. I like it better than the original Parent Trap.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Crap, honestly. Sorry, Haley Mills. That's the actress who played the original set of twins.
I see. I didn't know there was an original.
Yes. Okay. So, all right, guys.
I'm not joking when I say I live under a rock.
Yes. Well, I am an entertainment journalist, so
I only crawl out sometimes. Goblin energy all the time.
That's fair. But yeah, it's sort of my job to know stuff like this. And I don't know. You can ask my parents. I've just had a weirdly encyclopedic knowledge of entertainment stuff for a long time. I watched a lot of TV as a kid, and a lot of it's just in there now.
I get that.
But yeah, there's a movie from the 60s called The Parent Trap, and it starred these two blonde, well, it starred one blonde girl named Haley Mills, and she plays both twins, and she's got like, I don't know. I think one of the twins had like a shorter blonde haircut, and maybe the other one's hair was a little bit longer or something. But anyway, yeah, I like the remake better.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I like the remake a little better. Probably because Lindsay Lohan's around my age, so when that movie came out, I was around the same age as the characters, and it was just
adorable.
Well, it was more like, you know, it was set in relatable. The 90s. Yeah, it was more relatable because it was set in the 90s instead of two twins who meet at summer camp and don't know each other and are like, oh my god, this is crazy.
Oh my god, no way.
Yeah.
Your face anyway. Is my face.
Yeah, whatever. I don't remember how it all goes. I haven't seen either one of those movies in a long time. Anyway, it's not important. So, Jeremy Irons was given, like, I guess, like, whoever made up the dressing rooms on set or whatever, they gave Irons two different dressing rooms and two sets of costumes for both characters. And he was originally going to go,
That's interesting.
Yeah. And he was originally going to go with that, but then he was like, but no. The kind of the point of this is that these characters are so intertwined that sometimes you can't tell which one's which or who's doing what or whatever. They're practically one person functioning in two different adults' bodies. So he mixed the wardrobe and only used one dressing room. And he instead focused on this thing called the Alexander technique to portray them differently. So that basically does like different energy points. Like you just give off of a different aura with both of them. And it does things like focusing on each character's posture. So let's say, for example,
I did notice that like you can see where, like, I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like one of the twins walks on the balls of his feet and has a different way of carrying himself as opposed to the other one who puts all of his weight on his heels. And you're right. It's very it's noticeable in the film. And if you pick up on,
like, Elliot gives off a more confident posture as well.
Well, yes, because he is the confident one. The forward-facing one that goes to the award shows and whatnot.
Yeah, and Beverly's more, like,
slumped and sulking.
Yeah, and he's very, like, introverted compared to Elliot.
Yeah, they're very different, and yet two halves of the same.
They're the very same, yeah. Very similar.
Yeah. So, originally, the movie was going to be titled Gemini. You know, the twin signs.
Yeah.
It totally works. But the studio was like, no, we don't like that. And then they're like, let's call it Twins. Very on the nose studio. but then it was changed to Dead Ringers after Ivan Reitman, who had previously produced two of David Cronenberg's earlier films, he came to Cronenberg and was like, look, I'm making this movie about a pair of twins, and I want to use that title. So can I have the title? And Cronenberg was never sold on just calling it Twins. So he's like, sure, whatever, that's fine. The movie ends up being The Movie Twins that came out in 1988, starring Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, ha, ha, ha.
As the twins. It's a comedy if you can't tell. Margot Kidder was David Cronenberg's second choice for playing Claire. But Kiddo, you know, the first actress went through with it. But Kidder would have been like the runner-up if the first actress.
Yeah, you feel didn't. make through with it, you know, go through with it.
Yeah. Yes, if Genevieve
had. Yeah, yeah.
It's beautiful how you butcher it.
Nailed it.
If Genevieve hadn't taken on the role, Margot Kidder would have done it. Kidder, incidentally, had previously played a pair of homicidal twins in Brian De Palma's 1972 film Sisters.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. I've seen Sisters. I saw it. So there's this streaming service called Mubi, right? That maybe you've seen, like, ads for.
Mubi. I don't think so.
Okay. Well, Mubi is like an art house streaming service that shows really arty and, like, foreign films and stuff. Mubi used to be called something else a long, long time ago, like 10, 12 years ago. And it had its own, like, extension on Facebook. Like, when Facebook had, like, different... I guess Facebook technically still does have apps. But this was when, like, Facebook having apps within Facebook was, like, a new advancement. This was around the same time when everybody was playing Farmville on Facebook.
I was just about to say, like, Farmville and when Candy Crush first started.
Yes, same time period. Anyway, Mubi used to be called something else. I don't remember what it was called, but you could watch movies on that app for free back then. And they had Brian De Palma's film Sisters, and that's how I first watched it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Kidder, just to give you, she played in the old Superman movies. She played Lois Lane.
I was gonna say her name sounded really familiar, but I couldn't pinpoint who. That's why she's Lois Lane.
Yeah. Well, also for horror movie fans, you will recognize Kidder as the comic relief and one of the best parts of Bob Clark's Black Christmas.
Oh, okay.
She plays I forgot what her character's name is in that movie, but she plays she plays Barb, actually. Her character's name is Barb in Black Christmas, and she is drunk as a skunk throughout a good portion of the movie, and it's...
That's awesome.
It's hysterical. There's this scene in Black Christmas where she is at a Christmas party where there are children, and she's seemingly trying to give one of these kids, like, half her drink at one point. Because she's sorry, just so Levy's, drunk.
Levy's sniffing the window seal. I wasn't sure if you heard that.
I did not. And then there's also... She also just says really inappropriate stuff while she's drunk. It's amazing. Go watch the original Black Christmas if you've never seen it. So Entertainment Weekly once rated this as one of the top 20 scariest films of all time. But most lists never mention this film in scariest of all time lists. It definitely has some sinister, fucking creepy moments. But
it's like a slow burn and thriller more than anything else.
It is. But we cover thrillers on this podcast as well. Yeah. But yes, I would say that it's actually shockingly tame for a Cronenberg film. So, with that in mind, go watch some of his other stuff if you want to see freakier things. Speaking of, when Beverly is giving a gyno exam to a patient, he compliments her on her inner beauty and wishes that there was an inner beauty pageant for people's organs.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Now, in Cronenberg's latest film, Crimes of the Future, that just came out last year, the inner beauty pageant is a real event in that film. Now, if you haven't seen last year's Crimes of the Future, I encourage you to. It is from a much earlier screenplay by Cronenberg, back from his heyday of the body horror era. And so the imagery and overall body horror weirdness really does not disappoint. Plus, Olivia, it has your girl Kristen Stewart in it as an art surgery groupie. And no, I will not explain any further than that.
Love me some Twilight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. yeah, but it's a bizarre movie and I can't properly describe it. You'll just have to go see it. And but anyway,
the intro was weird too. I was like, what?
Oh, and we didn't even talk about the dream sequence when look, they're doing surgery in these blood red robes in the dream sequence.
And like they're very culty.
It's so culty looking. And it's just like, if someone started bleeding out, the only way you'd notice is if it just got really wet from blood.
You're like, yeah, they were the color of blood, like blood red, yeah.
But that's how you know it's a dream sequence, because it's so like, what is happening?
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah, nothing seems right in that moment.
The whole thing seems like a fever dream.
Yeah, and yet so much of this kind of happens.
Yeah.
differently, though, and you will play that out for us in just a few minutes. We're going to take a short break, and then Olivia is going to tell us about the Marcus twins.
Woo, woo.
Woo. And we're back.
All right.
Olivia, tell us about these crazy twins.
All right. So Stuart and Cyril Marcus were born on June 2nd, 1930. People say they were identical, but I also read things that they were technically fraternal. It was weird.
I believe that they're fraternal. They just happen to look a fair amount alike.
Yeah.
Like the Olsen twins.
Yeah.
They're fraternal.
Yeah. And fun fact, they're Geminis, obviously, June 2nd, which is funny because when you had mentioned that they wanted to call the movie Gemini, I was like, oh shit, they're Geminis. That's insane.
Oh, I mean, that is interesting that they are twins and they're Geminis, but you know.
Right? Right. I feel like that's pretty good chance that you got twins that are Geminis. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to be like thinking about the birthdays of like every twin I know now.
Right? My cousins are twins and they're in August.
So
they're Virgos, end of August.
Tiff and her sister were born in September, so they're Virgos. And then my friends from elementary school that live in different countries now, I believe both of them do. their birthday is like the 30th of December.
Ah, a crappy corn like me.
I believe so. Mm-hmm. Because I remember, I always remembered that their birthday was like a month or so after mine.
And mine's almost exactly a month after your, like a month and what, 2 days?
Yeah. You're 23.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's a month and 2 days after. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like 4 years. And like 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm so old and decrepit now, Olivia. All right.
So both Stuart and Cyril became gynecologists who were extremely good at their jobs. They graduated from Syracuse University in 1951 and State University Upstate Medical Center in 1954.
Oh.
They had even made publications in medical textbooks, as they were known as brilliant men. On July 17th, 1975, the brothers were found deceased at apartment 450 East 69rd Street by the handyman. Okay, may I point out real quick that, like, New York street names are insanely long and unnecessary.
I mean, not all of them, because a lot of them are just like 1st Street, 2nd Street, 43rd Street.
We don't have like 43rd Streets. We got like 1st and maybe 2nd, but a lot of ours are like Main.
Well, I mean, not every city is huge like New York City either.
True. That's why
that's
I'm
why
like,
it has wow. like a 43rd Street.
Yeah, that's why I'm like 69rd Street. Like, I don't even know how you would say that. 69er? Nice.
I don't know. I don't know if they have one of those. You know what? I don't know. I'd have to ask someone.
Yeah.
I'd have to ask one of my friends that lives in New York City. I live in upstate, okay? Like, I don't fuck with
things
the city
are a little
much.
More similar with us, I feel, probably. Between, because we're not too far from each other.
Yeah, I live in a little hamlet. Like, I live in a small town.
The apartment belonged to Cyril, and they were in separate rooms when they were found. Cyril was face down in boxers on the bed, and Stuart was faced up on the floor, naked. The cops had to cover their faces when they entered because garbage, alcohol bottles, and empty prescription bottles were all over the apartment. Stuart had passed about a day or two before Cyril did. At the time, the cause of death was not determined, but violence had been ruled out. So basically, like, anything to do with homicide, break-ins, all that was completely ruled out. But the cops didn't go into, like, any further backgrounds on the twins. They only focused on the death of the twins, like how they had died, right? Like, they didn't go back and be like, oh, were they doing stuff like this? Or, you know, it's just like, what killed them? That's the only thing we care about.
Yeah.
Which I think is why this case is such a mystery for people, because it wasn't until later on when they actually figured what had happened out.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, it's also just really weird for one twin or one sibling or anyone for that matter to just like find someone dead, and instead of immediately calling an ambulance or something, you just like lay down and die with them.
Yeah.
That's a choice. Even I don't care if it's your twin or not. That's a choice that most people wouldn't make.
Yeah, I feel like that's only a twin thing.
I don't know if it would only be a twin thing. I feel like if you were like in a really intense like relationship, that you might do that, especially if you were unhinged.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, you know, like let's say that these two were a husband and wife and not twins. Like, I think they might still do the same weird thing.
I guess it depends on how much you're attached to the other person.
That's what I mean. It's about the attachment. And I definitely have known couples that are, like, too attached.
I will die if you ever leave me.
Okay, so let me think about an actual example. So, well, it's from a movie, actually. But so have you ever seen
a lot of my friends when they were 15?
Well, I mean, okay, that's, yes. teenagers, everything is life and death dramatic when you're a teenager. It is the most dramatic time of, like, most people's lives.
Really? But, like, it really is.
Yeah, everything feels so big because your life is so small as a teen. For the average teen, anyway. I mean, there's obviously famous teens who have bigger issues than us. Like, Drew Barrymore was in rehab when she was, like, 10 or 12
yeah, that's
or something
true.
Crazy like that. So, you know what I mean? Like, but your average teen, you know, the fact that Becky didn't write you a note back is devastating, you know?
Yeah, like, how dare she? The audacity of that bitch. Fucking Becky.
Like, I poured my heart out to her, and she didn't even look at me in the hall.
All I did was put boxes with yes or no above. That's all she had to do was check one.
All she had to do. She could have even given me a thumbs up or a down in the hall. Anyway.
The police did interview some of the tenants in the apartment. One of them was Mrs. Yvonne Green, who was a neighbor of the brothers. And that she had seen a man in a work suit and a man in a business suit breaking into Cyril's apartment.
When oh, wait. She, sorry. Yeah. I had a point that I didn't get around to. So oh. that the scene I was talking about from a movie.
Oh, yes.
So the movie is 2000's What Lies Beneath. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Okay. So it stars Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford.
Okay.
And... Mm-hmm. And they move, I guess they move to like a new house or something, or she just moves into his house or something. I can't remember what the deal is exactly. Or I think maybe if they just move into a new house. But anyway, the point is, because it's a lot more involved, this is just a very side scene. But the woman, Michelle Pfeiffer, the wife, she sees her next door neighbor like, fucking freaking out next door through the fence, and she's like, what the hell is going on? So she kind of like pokes her eye over there, is like, hey, is everything okay? And she kind of thinks that the woman is being like abused or something, but what the woman says to her is, have you ever like loved someone so intensely that when they're away from you, it physically hurts?
I had a friend who said that once.
I'm paraphrasing what the character says, but that's mm-hmm. essentially what the character says. And that just always stuck with me. I was like, that's some intense codependency.
I literally had a friend who had said that. They'd only been dating for like 2 weeks.
Ooh, stage 9 clinger.
I mean, in all fairness, they are still together, and it's been, like, they've met in high school.
Yeah, but that's still scary at 2 weeks that you're feeling intense. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Good Lord.
I just laughed at her and told her she was dumb. I was like, no, bitch, you're not. I'm dependent on you.
Like, you're...
Yeah, we're dependent on each other, not you and him. Because I was like...
Oh, God, right? All right, anyway... But you were saying?
Yes. Yeah, so Yvonne had seen a man in a work suit and a business suit breaking into Cyril's apartment. When she had questioned them, the man in the business suit turned around, glared at her, and said, my brother is ill. Now, remember that, okay? Because it kind of comes back later on.
Right.
After an autopsy, the medical examiner said there was no evidence of mental illness from either brother. And this was from an article in New York Times from back then, like in the 70s. So for them, mental illness was like cancer. That's what they had ruled out.
Cancer's not a mental illness?
That's, yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't question it. It was like, whatever.
Okay.
But I think the reason they had obviously checked for cancer is because Cyril was just over 100 pounds at 5'11" when he had passed away.
Yeah, they were both scarily
thin and sickly malnourished. Looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they conducted basically like chemical tests, neither brother had barbiturates, narcotics, or alcohol in their system. And at this point, they had determined they must have passed from withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
So some questions started to arise, you know, like they didn't show signs of withdrawal, like no seizures, tongue bites, brain hemorrhaging, none of that. They conducted more tests and found out that Stewart actually had low amounts of barbiturates in his system, but Cyril had nothing in his system at all.
Mm.
So like, how did he die? Those are some real questions.
Yeah.
So we're going to kind of backtrack a little bit into the younger years of the twins. This whole case is kind of like a big clusterfuck. Everything ties in with each other. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were younger, the boys were never into sports. Their father was also a doctor and would buy them chemistry sets, which is very similar to how the start of the movie is.
Oh, yeah. Let's briefly revisit the first scene in the film.
Fuck you, I'll tell my dad.
Go, little girl. So the twins.
That line was iconic.
Totally. The twins literally like walk. They have this conversation where they're like trying to learn about sex sort of from each other, more or less. And then they like kind of just like walk up to her and they're like, hey, you want to have sex in a bathtub with us? It's for an experiment. And she just looks at him and is like, fuck you. I'll tell my daddy that you're talking dirty.
Yeah, like it's so fucking funny.
And she calls them freaks, and it's yes, little girl, yes.
Yeah, it was so good. So good. Their father had claimed that they never really played with anybody else, just kind of each other. Also, classmates knew them as extremely formal and snobs. Like they would dress up like in little suits and dress shirts, even as like kids and stuff.
Oh, God, they were those kids.
Yeah. As a medical classmate commented that they never talked to anybody. And if they did, it was almost robotic, as if they were trying to imitate the other person that they were talking to. Like, it was weird when I was reading that. Like,
well, I mean, there's just people that will annoyingly mimic other people. And I mean, that's also how comedians get their impressions down really well.
Yeah, that is true. Right. And one of the patients of the doctor said that when she had given birth to twins, that Stewart told her the news with like a really disdained taste, basically. Like, as if she wasn't good enough for the child.
Mm.
Like, oh, here's your baby.
Mm.
And another patient came out saying that when one of the doctors would poke to see how dilated she was, he would basically go, and call his brother in to do the exact same thing, which she felt was extremely unnecessary and was very painful.
Like, I'm sorry, you're my doctor, not your brother. I did not consent to him popping up in here, too.
Yeah. And she also basically got the vibes that they couldn't do anything without each other.
Yeah. Hello. Super codependent.
Yeah. So about a year before their death, the Marcus brothers had started to become extremely more distant with, like, their coworkers than they already were.
Yeah.
Both brothers were having emotional and romantic problems throughout the year. Excuse me. Sorry, Ed burped.
Right. One of them was actually married at some point, right?
Yes. Yep. The doorman of Cyril's apartment mentioned that over the last bit, he had looked as if he had lost an extreme amount of weight and started to look really grungy looking.
They started doing really gross stuff in that apartment.
Oh yeah, especially the year before they, within the year before they had passed.
Yeah, like the last couple of weeks, they started pooping in an armchair.
Yeah.
Instead of going to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's why, like, the police had to cover their faces when they went in. It was not a good scene.
Yeah, dead bodies and a feces chair.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Another patient came out, but it was the husband of the patient. Robert H. Abel, who is a writer, was actually very thankful for Stuart Marcus, as his children wouldn't be here without his help. And Abel and his wife actually had multiple checkups with Stuart, and he would cancel and reschedule a lot of them. And eventually the nurse ended up telling Abel, after the upteenth time of rescheduling, that she was extremely concerned for Stuart's well-being.
Yeah.
So they're starting to get kind of a bad reputation at this point.
Well, they would also do things like for real, like sort of like in the movie, but like instead of switching romantic partners, like if one of them was supposed to be in surgery but didn't want to go, they would like just send the other one, right?
Yeah, pretty much. A month before their deaths, coworkers noticed that they were acting very strange one day. One of the physicians who asked to stay anonymous at the hospital wouldn't go into detail about how they had acted, other than that they were extremely out of it. Mm-hmm. And on the day of the odd behaviors, one of the brothers actually arrived for an operation, and he was so out of it that another staff member had to call the other brother to come and get him. Mm-hmm. When he arrived, he was also very out of it and kind mm-hmm. of weird about the whole situation. So the physician who had made the statement didn't disclose which brother was originally supposed to go in for the operation. I'm assuming for like credibility wise.
Right.
It's not known when they started doing prescription drugs, but it was some point in the 70s is when they became highly addicted to Bare-Butes and amphetamines while delivering babies and performing operations.
Barbiturates and amphetamines.
Yes. I can't speak. My bad.
I just wanted to help you.
I mean, we all learned how well I can say words trying to say what's her face's name. So,
hey, we all know when I stumble over something, I just go blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. In 1972, the built-in handyman believes Cyril had suffered an overdose. He was passing by when he heard noises coming from inside of the apartment. After no answer and not being able to open the door, he had called Stuart for help. After what felt like forever, Stuart finally agreed to come over and assist. So that kind of ties into what Yvonne Green had said when she said she saw a handyman and a man in a business suit breaking in.
Right.
Kind of corresponds with each other. And like, after
my brother is ill and I cannot open the door.
Yeah. And after being sent to the hospital, it's believed Cyril suffered a stroke during the overdose, causing brain damage because it had taken so long for him to get help.
That sucks.
Yeah. So I'm sure between the drugs and the brain damage, you know, that probably is what did Cyril in.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in 1974, the once popular office had become dingy and dirty. The brothers had slurred speech and were on the lawsuits. And by 1975, the chairman gave the brothers an ultimatum. Basically, you get help or bye, you're not allowed to be doctors anymore.
We'll have your medical licenses.
Which, I mean, totally understandable. I agree with that 1,000%.
They could have killed people working high like that.
Well, first off, I feel like the chairman should have stepped in a long time ago, but I won't put any blame on him. He can only do what he can when he's been told about the situation. So, they decided to cut the addiction themselves and cold turkey that shit.
That's a good way to die.
It's obviously the best and only option to cut a drug addiction. Didn't you know that, Anna?
No, there's these things called rehab.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Where they monitor the amount and slowly wean you off of them?
Yep, yep. no, these two decided to hide out in Cyril's apartment with TV dinners and anticonvulsant medications.
Mm, so healthy.
Yeah, very similar to the movie as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. And at some point, one of them did adventure out for a refill to obviously get more prescription drugs.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you're cutting an addiction by yourself, you're going to end up falling back.
Yeah.
And between July 10th and 14th at some point, Stuart had overdosed and died. The doorman actually noticed Cyril acting like frantic and disorientated, trying to get out of the building really fast. He had offered some help, but Cyril had declined and said, "I can manage on my own."
Mm-hmm.
Once outside, Cyril then returned back into his apartment because he was like, "Oh, fuck this shit. I can't do it on my own."
Mm-hmm.
He had wrote a note that they say it wasn't a suicide note, but it kind of seems like one.
Right.
And he had placed it inside of an Iris Murdoch novel, A Fairly Honorable Defeat. That was the only, and it was the only non-medical book inside of the entire apartment.
That's an interesting choice to put that too, with the title, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I did kind of read, like, in the article I was reading, they did give, like, a quick summary of the story. It was something about, I think, twins and the devil or something like that. I didn't really go into it much, but it's almost a foreshadowing to the Marcus twins.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Cyril then went and laid on the bed and just waited to die.
Just a waiting around to die.
Yeah. So I just have a couple fun facts, and I'm all done.
Okay.
They actually conducted over 30 chemical tests on the brother to determine what was in their system to cause them to die.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot. Cyril actually would pick up his daughters from his ex-wife's house while he was high on drugs.
Well, what irresponsible father hasn't?
I was like, oh no. And for anybody that doesn't know what barbiturates are, they are a type of depressant drug with chemical, like a type of acid in them. I don't even want to try and say that word again. Oh, my God. When used correctly for hypnotics, anticonvulsants, acute and tension headaches, anesthesia, and assisted suicides, it works great.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people use the drug recreationally for sedative uses. But it is still being used today.
Yeah.
And that's the end of my case. That was a wild ride.
I told you
it was all over the place because it's just like everything kind of mixes in with each other.
Yeah. I would say that the most common barbiturate probably before we leave is phenobarbital.
I would not have known that because I just looked up a quick summary on Wikipedia of what they were.
I have lots of family members with a wide variety of illnesses, and I just know a lot of prescription drugs and what they do.
Yeah. Like it's a very numbing like drug, very numbing.
Yeah. I mean, it's for sedation, insomnia, seizures, epilepsy.
And like I said, assisted suicide.
Which is legal in Canada, but not here.
And I believe that when you're executed for the death penalty, they use them as well.
Yes, I think they use one barbiturate and then something else. Like there's like two or three different drugs that they shoot in.
Yeah, but yeah, I told you guys that was a wild ride. It was all over the place. A lot of foreshadowing throughout their life that kind of ended their life.
Yeah. Yeah. It ended tragically because they, you know, they were two prestigious doctors at the top of their field at one point.
Well, yeah, like I said, they had published stuff in medical journals and medical papers were published. Like, they were very, very highly recognized doctors.
Oh, yeah. Like, they were very well respected and they just let their life spiral and crumble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit got real.
You know, and I'm sure it was very, not very similar, but I'm sure it was similar to how the movie was, where Elliot had said that he had to balance things back out with Bev. And I'm like, twins are such a weird thing in nature. And, you know, they're still trying to figure out like the twin things and all the twin theories, if they're true. And like, there are twins that feel the same, feel that what their twins feel.
That's creepy. And I also find the like twin languages to be really weird, because none of them, like, they're usually not, one twin language usually has nothing to do with another set of twins' secret language, you know?
Yeah. They just all different.
They just start speaking nonsense and they like,
only they know what they're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like they're psychically connected or something.
Like we said before, the silent twins, they had their own language.
They did, yes. I had some friends I went to school with that were twins that had their own language. And I was like, so did you guys just like sit down one day and be like, okay, this means this and this means this? They're like, no, we just instantly got it. And I'm like, that's so weird.
Yeah, and like, I mean, twins have been fascinating for the longest time, as dark as I'm about to get right now. I mean, even in World War II, they did a lot of experiments on twins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, just trying to figure out, like, what goes on. So I'm sure it was probably something similar like that with the Marcus twins, where, you know, the other twin could feel the other one spiraling and kind of spiraled with him, because it's like, we're in this together kind of thing.
Yeah.
Two peas in the same pod. Like,
you know what's interesting though, too, when you were talking about how they were very snobbish.
Yeah.
They actually said to a patient once, a patient was like, hey, do you think that these could be twins that I'm having? Because she was like a lot bigger than she thought she should be for how far along she was. And she hadn't done an ultrasound yet. And I don't remember which one it was, but he looked at her and was like, it was probably the more outspoken one. But he looked at her and was like, he just gave her this disgusted look, like,
as if you're not good enough for twins. It's probably the person, yes, that I was talking about. It's probably the same person, because she said they talked to her with like such disgust and disdain, like, you are not worthy, yeah, to have twins.
Yeah, or that is exactly what happened. It probably was her.
Yeah, like, which is, one, extremely unprofessional, because people who are infertile, you know, or are going through infertile situations with themselves or with their partners, you know, it's a really traumatic, and it really fucks you up, like, mentally. Yeah. So, like, hearing your doctor basically be like, you're not worthy to have more than one kid because, like, you couldn't have them to begin with kind of thing. Like, that would be so discouraging and heartbreaking to hear.
It would be. And you know what? They weren't, like, they're so so stuck up their own asses that they wouldn't have even have thought about it like that. They were just thinking about
it. Or they were probably way too fucked up and didn't realize they were even talking like that. Like, I think they were just
actually arrogant assholes.
Oh, 1,000%. But I'm sure being on drugs, like, escalated arrogant.
Sure. But I was going to say, like, I feel like they were just like, not like, oh, your womb couldn't possibly handle that. It's just like, hello, we're twins. We're amazing, perfect specimens.
Nobody else can be as good as us. We are gods.
Yeah, you're not worthy to birth twins. Not because your uterus is messed up. You're just beneath us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that was their state of mind there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, my God. But, yeah. Fuck twins. Fuck those twins.
Fucking
right?
Nuts, man.
Not all of them, but definitely this pair was.
Oh, yeah.
I love all my twin fans. I mean, and my twin friends. Not that I have a ton of them.
Shout out to my cousins in the UK who are twins. What up?
Yeah.
Cole and Dylan Sprouse, if you're listening, what's up?
Well, if we're going to do that, Jill and Jacqueline Hennessy, we saw you in this movie.
Scarlett Johansson and her brother, what's up?
That's true. Well, if we're going to do
Kutcher,
that.
Ashton Kutcher.
I was about to
brother.
Say. Anyway, shout out to all the twins that are not crazy.
Even if you are crazy, what's up?
Yeah, well, shout out to all the ones that aren't drug addict rapists, like the ones in the movie.
You know, yeah, if you're a piece of shit, doesn't matter who you are, twin or not, fuck you.
Yeah. All right, on that note, I'm not sure what we're going to do next or who my next guest will be, but I'll figure that out shortly and we'll get back to having a more normal, regularly scheduled program over here at Horror Versus Reality. So bear with us.
I'm sure I'll be back.
Probably because you have a much more normal schedule now.
Yes, very open.
That aligns with mine a little better. So, yeah, I'll get you back whenever I can because, I'm just trying to find people that have normal schedules. Because, gosh, when some of your favorite podcasting collaborators live in, like, the UK, you're like, all right, well, it's going to be 4 p.m. my time and, like, 9 p.m. your time. And
it's not even later.
Yeah, it's a lot easier when we're in the same time zone. So, shout out to my...
I think it's, what, like, eight or 9 hours difference in the UK?
It's 5 hours difference. Between me and BP of the Let's Talk Horror podcast. He's my most frequent British collaborator, so I mentioned him specifically. But yeah, we have a 5 hour difference when we record together. So it usually is 9 p.m. for him and like 4 p.m. for me.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I must be thinking farther Europe. Probably like France or something.
Yeah, you're thinking a little further over. I don't know exactly where in the UK he lives. I'm not trying to, like, blow up his spot or anything.
No, but anyway. I'm probably thinking of, like, France.
Probably.
That's on the mainland, and I think there's a time difference there.
Yeah, there probably is. I don't know if it's a 3 hour time difference, but.
Ah, fuck it.
Yeah, I don't know.
No one said I was good at math or French, so it's fine.
All right. On that note, Liv, tell us where we can find your fun channels and whatnot, and then take us out.
All right. So I have a YouTube channel called Liv Spooky Official. I do like some paranormal stuff on there if anybody's into that stuff. I just started my podcast back up, my new podcast, I guess I should say. And if that's Live Spooky, you can find us on Spotify right now or Buzzsprout. I'm currently working on getting us on more platforms, but that's in the future. You can find me on Instagram as well under Live Spooky. And same with Twitter and stuff. I'm all over the place.
You should spell that for them.
Oh, L? Yeah, sorry. It's LIVV Spooky.
Yeah. So if you type in LIVE, you will not find her.
Yes. No, I'm not like live inside. It's live like my name, Olivia, but I put two V's.
There you go. So,
yep.
So that's how you find her, guys.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for filling in for Morgan. and coming.
We miss you, Morgan.
Yeah. Love you, lady. Can't wait to get you back. But I love my guests until then.
We love you too.
Aw, thanks, guys. All right. We will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.